From UA Little Rock Public Radio, this is The Art Scene. I'm Daniel Brain. This week, we rejoin our conversation with actress Elizabeth Ashley. She's in Arkansas to portray Texas Governor Ann Richards at Arkansas Rep's one-woman show, simply titled Ann. This week, we hear more from Ashley about her approach to acting and how her personal philosophy on life has been molded by her craft. We start by talking about how Richards balanced her duties, leading one of the country's largest states, with her duties as a mother and grandmother. Then we'll hear more about Ashley's decades-long career in film, TV, and Broadway.
Sort of in the middle part of the play where she's answering all these phone calls, taking care of all these political operatives, but she's making time to organize fishing trips, talk to her granddaughter. I thought, like, you know, she kind of had to do that. She couldn't have just blown them off and
No. I mean, and she needed them. She had no husband. I mean, that was her family. I mean, that she needed that contact, that love, that support, you know. And of course, as quite often happens, the children don't support you as much as they get mad at you for not being there enough, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious as to your approach to this role. You essentially are tasked with humanizing her. She's a historical figure. She's no longer with us, certainly. But we have certainly people's accounts of her and all of the famous political people who have surrounded her and know about her. I can't help but notice when you were talking about your beginnings of your career in New York, you know, you sort of listed off a laundry list of these amazing famous people, and of course you're known for your friendship with Tennessee Williams, people like that. Similarly, I'm just wondering how you feel you're humanized.
I guess what I don't understand is you're saying that there are people that see me as not humanized, or
no. I guess
I can see that. I mean, a lot of people think I'm a beast, but
that could play into it. But I think it's maybe just it's a barrier that people have. I think maybe that they can see all of this illustrious career of you personally, and you're rolling your eyes.
Let me tell you something. I've been in the show rackets. I made my Broadway debut. I mean, in this teeny, tiny sort of under five, that means under five lines part, in 1958, right? Just out of acting school. And, I mean, or maybe it was 59, I can't remember. But, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. And the one thing that it's so hard to get, particularly kids that want to go into the business and civilians, I mean people not in the show rackets, right, to understand is that, oh God, any career, you write the resume, you know, and it all sounds, you know, but take it from me, it's brutal, no matter if you become one of those multi-million dollar mega stars, which God knows I have never been, or if you're sort of a journeyman actor, which I kind of am. It's as high as you fly is as low as you go. If you knew how many times I've been counted dead, down, over with, finished, I mean, and that applies to everyone, right? I mean, no matter what level you're on. And it is a truly brutal profession. Now, anyone who decides or has to become an artist in our culture, you leave the conventional world. I mean, if you are successful, you have privileges more than rights. I mean, most people have, I mean, as American citizens, we're supposed to have rights. But if you become successful or whatever, then the truth is you certainly have privileges, right? And, I mean, it's a thing that people in the rackets don't like to talk about. But, I mean, when you are down, when you have failures, you know, truly, you're dead down over with and finished. I mean, look at what happened to Tennessee. You know, I mean, the one of the two or three greatest poet dramatists in the English speaking language and probably any language. But Tennessee was like the most celebrated, famous playwright in the world, and then he wanted to move on from what he called the sex, south, and sin plays. And the minute that he left what he was expected of him, they were on him like sharks in a feeding frenzy. There were people, like when I first met him and worked with him in what, 72, oh my God, I mean, he'd been counted dead down over with and finished, and there were people, I mean, credible writers, you know, I'm not talking about the scum press, credible writers who said, well, I mean, he's just over, and probably those early plays weren't as good as we thought they were. And it's one of the reasons that I loved Edward Albee long before I ever knew him, because the same thing happened to Edward, right? But Edward constantly wrote about Tennessee and scalded the people that were being so derogatory about him. And it's just a dynamic that happens. And I think a lot of it has to do with what someone has become successful and wildly celebrated. There is a certain aspect of human nature that then loves to bring them down, you know? I mean, it's also in our day and age. There was always the scum press, right? And there always will be. But now with the internet, you know, I mean, it's a place where people can vent their most vicious impulses, you know? And, I don't involve myself in it at all. I mean, I don't even know how to get on Face Thing or Insta or any of that. I don't do it. I've never had a press agent in my entire career. I mean, so I haven't necessarily played by the rules. And that has, I am told many times, have been told that's cost me, you know, my career. And of course, I've retired from the rackets twice. You know, I'm good sailing around, you know, just around, not as a rich yachty, as a rag-ass sailor, but I mean, I've circumnavigated the globe. And then the first time I retired, I got married to a movie star who was like, I never really had a father because my parents were divorced, so I grew up with my mother. And I mean, I guess somewhere I'd always wanted, you know, like a really sort of, like a regular kind of father. Well, I mean, needless to say, because I was kind of a wild child, so needless to say, that didn't work out very well. But I retired and was held hostage in Beverly Hills for about 7 years. But I mean, I had my son and got divorced, blah, blah, blah. But I'm trying to remember what your original question was. But look, one thing I've been thinking about a lot recently is one of the American diseases is, and I think perhaps it interfaces with capitalism, but there is the American worship of celebrity and money, right? Somehow those have become our gods. Not mine, but I mean, generally speaking. And people tend to think they're kind of the same thing, you know? And that is so dangerous. And I understand that there's much profit in it, you know, from all kinds of sources. But the worship of money, which has been pounded into the American consciousness probably since its inception, for very good reason. In other words, people that came here were struggling. They were immigrants. I mean, they had to survive. And so survival was winning in a way, right? But as that grew and grew and grew, and the early capitalists became what America aspired to, like if it was a Vanderbilt or a Rockefeller or whatever. And especially in times like the Depression, and God knows the horrors of the recent recessions in 2008 and like that. And somehow, much of it is subliminal, but that wealth makes you a better person. And people don't like to admit it, and okay, they rail against it in the pulpits and all that, but it's hypocritical. And so coalescing into that became celebrity. I suppose the early movies, right, when there were like those early movie stars and, you know, and it became something, those became things that were the American dream, right? And that has become toxic, I think, particularly in this modern era with the internet and like that. And one of the things about the cyber world is, you know, when you see all these teenage kids, you know, taking off their clothes, I mean, you know, in this, the horrible sort of, but I don't mean it derisively about these people, but the sort of Kardashian effect. There's something that twists people in that this thing, celebrity wealth, is attainable, but it leaves out, and has for many years left out, the fact that what God knows what artists and much of the time, wealth is the product of incredibly hard work and brutal circumstances, brutal things that you have to, the kind of work and the kind of rejection and the kind of failure that you encounter, and can you weather that storm? I mean, I try to tell students everything that, in my particular profession, I mean, it is so brutal. You don't try to become an actor, a performer of any kind, unless there's utterly nothing else you can do. It's not like you can make a choice between, well, am I going to be an insurance salesman? Am I going to work on Wall Street? Or am I going to... No. Because the minute that you decide to become an artist, you have left conventional society. And so you are in another kind of tribe. And it's going to be brutal and hard, but in the end, extremely rewarding, you know. But it requires, oh God, it requires a kind of work ethic and a kind of, I mean, look, freedom without discipline is chaos. And that's what is the hardest thing, I think, for the young to grasp.
Yeah, and I think, how do you see that manifesting, certainly if the younger generation are lacking sort of that discipline or lacking the understanding of where they came from, essentially, where the craft came from? How is that manifested in the craft as you've noticed it or in...
Well, I mean, it's that awful thing of kids... Look, I totally understand. Kids want to be famous, you know? I mean, they think that being famous is the end-all and be-all, right? Well, first of all, they don't understand the difference between famous and infamous. But famous for what? Do you know? You see what I mean? It seems to me, from what I hear and what I see and what the young tell me, that, I mean, there's a lot of people that become famous in some way, like on the internet or like that, but they don't have, what do? You know? I mean, I grew up like with, look, my mother believed that if you weren't in school, you had a job. I mean, from the time I was like 9, right? And I mean, I guess it's work ethic. I mean, you have to do something, right? And otherwise, fame is just kind of infamous, accidental, or circumstantial, you know? And fame is not all it's cracked up to be.
I can only imagine.
Sweetheart, I was a tabloid queen before there were tabloids almost. I mean, oh God. I mean, it's, when I was really young and first in films and all of that, I mean, it can right burn you out too.
This is The Art Scene from UA Little Rock Public Radio. I'm Dan O'Brien. We're listening to part 2 of our conversation with Tony Award-winning actress Elizabeth Ashley, who's starring in the one-woman show Anne at Arkansas Rep.
It's a brutal industry. It's you've been down and out numerous times. Why keep doing
it? Everybody, there's nobody in the show rackets that has not been excoriated and really called dead down, over with, and finished in good riddance. It happens over and over. And then you come through, and there's nothing they love more than resurrecting you. You know what I mean? It's a cycle, right?
10 minutes. Okay. I've got 10 minutes. I'll give you the easiest question. What is your message to the universe as you see it?
My message to the universe, oh God. Don't give up the fight. You know, in whatever way you do, don't buckle under. Don't accept the status quo. I believe in heresy, right? Now, when you say heretic, most people immediately associate that with religion or whatever. But in fact, if you look like in the Oxford Dictionary, I can't quote letter and verse, but it's those who break precedent, who violate the conventional rules of whatever culture or society they're in, which I mean, throughout history, they've been burned at the stake and jailed and, you know, excoriated. But there's not one great individual who has achieved really great things in culture and in society and civilization that has not, in fact, been a heretic, that has not broken through. And without our heretics, we just go along with the status quo. And what's that thing about if things that stayed the same over and over eventually implode, right? So, I mean, to fight for, what Anne says in the play, why should your life be just about you, right? Because our lives are not just about us. I mean, we're like ants, like animals. I mean, we're connected, right? And I think to fight for the good, to fight for decency, kindness, generosity, understanding, tolerance, and though all of those things mean nothing unless they are applied to one's fellow man, to one's fellow humans. And I mean, I'm a stone loner, right? But that's the way I just personally live, right? I'm not good at cohabitation. God knows I tried it. I married everybody in the world for a while, and then I retired to the Hall of Fame with a plaque. But it's just to knowledge. You know, data is not knowledge, right? And there's for instance, I mean, this is a smaller aspect, but there's a new term in the last couple of years called media literacy, right? Now, look, most people work too hard. They have too much to do. To put food on the table, to like get their kids to school, to get, you know, to read every newspaper and this. But it is important to seek knowledge and to not just buy everything you hear, right? Particularly in the world we live in now, it is so dangerous. Because people work too hard and don't have time, God knows, I mean, they can be easily left to the horrors of like a Fox News or something. And it's not their fault. They're not the deplorables. It's because people don't have time. They work too hard. It's hard for average people to get it together. And the one thing I've seen in my life is the extremely wealthy. Well, if you break it down, what are the physical symbols of enormous wealth? Well, first of all, real estate, right? They live in great complexes, generally walled off from the world. The extremely wealthy the point of their existence is to avoid any contact with, I mean, their physical lives are arranged so that they never encounter sort of average people, because they live in their great complex with a wall. They have private transportation, so they get into a private vehicle, a private helicopter, a private plane, and they go to a private boat or a private glass tower somewhere where they have a private entrance, to go to a private office where only certain people are admitted, right? That really is physically what the gathering of great wealth, that's what you get, right? I mean, and you get like private rooms and great restaurants. Do you see what I'm saying? And that, I mean, that applies to, I mean, the children are transported privately to private schools. So it means that they divorce themselves from any contact with the everyday working class, middle class population. And I've always seen that as futile. You know, it's a kind of futile culture. But when I was very young and a revolutionary, someone said, probably Stokely Carmichael or somebody said, the only power the people have is in their numbers. There are a lot more of us. And if and when things get truly bad enough, a certain amount of people can break through any wall, right? And so the walled-in class is aware of that, and that's why the fear of the other is so promoted in our culture, you know? I've noticed, like, television commercials for security systems, and you're all, I mean, it's just, I find it tragic, you know? But 'twas ever thus. And look, you're never gonna, generally speaking, the population's never gonna beat the bad guys, but you have a moral obligation to just put a little sugar in the gas tank every chance you get.
That was Elizabeth Ashley. She spoke with Art Scene while starring in Arkansas Rep's production of Anne, giving us a glimpse into the life of late Texas Governor Anne Richards. That's our show for this week. Please join us next week at the same time. I'm Daniel Breen, and the Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.